So thank you for the invitation, and let me start with this cartoon. And this is where in evolution we are. Almost everybody knows what Wi-Fi is, even birds seem to know, and they're all worried about it. So in this talk we will have a lot of fancy pictures and very few equations. I wanted to make it zero, but that would have made me lose my context, so three, and bear with me there. This is also a colorblind friendly talk. What I mean is, if you can see three different colors on this, then you're okay. But people like me, and it turns out 5% Indian males are colorblind, so hopefully for the rest of the talk nobody will have a problem with respect to any of the two choices of colors, the basic colors. If you can't see three different colors here, then you should worry about it. And what I'm not going to talk about in this talk is about the call drop issue, which is being very popular right now, and it is even taking up a lot of media's time. In the evenings you can see all sorts of people, even it has gone to the court, and the Commercial Operators Society yesterday said that mobile operators are not responsible for drop in calls. I don't know who else is. Somebody has to be, and if they are not, somebody should pay for it. Okay, so let's just begin. And here is a canonical example of a mobile tower and a simple mobile which you have, most of you have, and talking to the base station. But things are not that simple. There are many other things around you. Let's say buildings, trees, roads, moving vehicles around you, and lots of dispersion, reflection, refraction is going to happen for the signal which is going to start from here, end up receiving here. And this is what, as a function of distance, the signal looks like at your mobile phone. So as a distance, of course, it decays, but around each of, let's say if you're fixed at particular distance, there are lots of random fluctuations because of environment around you or in between the tower and you or close to the tower, and that's also time varying, and it's very difficult to predict what it's going to be. So that is what is called as fading in typical wireless literature. So under this fading model, the rate at which a mobile tower can communicate with a mobile is given by this formula, which is a very famous result by Shannon long, long ago, that you can communicate at a rate which is proportional to log of 1 plus, so h square is the magnitude of the fading power, p is the transmit power, and n is the noise thermal power at your receiver end. So the final thing you cannot control, this is just your thermal noise at the receiver. The real quantity under control is P, which is the transmit power from the base station, and H square is given by the environment. And at this rate, you can communicate between the base station and the mobile. And this is also called a signal to noise ratio, which is an important quantity, captures everything. So it's barely visible, I think. So when you see these different bars on your mobile phone, what essentially is telling you is what is the value of this particular number. And the full 5 bars, which is the great signal, is something like minus 80 dBm, which is, so dBm is a quantity which is, you are comparing your received power with respect to 1 milliwatt of power. So minus 70 means something like 10 to the minus 7 compared to 1 milliwatt. And the minimum 1 bar is somewhere around minus 100 dBm, and that's also the noise floor. So when you are very close to the thermal noise power, that is what you see, more or less 1 bar, and if you dip below that, you lose a connection. So this is what a typical SNR shows up, which is essentially being driven by the fading and the power you are transmitting at. Things are not this simple, because not only you have all these obstructions in between, there are also lots of other base stations which are operating simultaneously, as well as lots of other mobile phones which are operating simultaneously, and one has to look at a more intricate problem, which is part of essentially all networks until now, 2G, 3G and 4G, all of them have this basic problem to solve. So let's suppose that...
I thought I interrupt you. So recently it is also 100 years of Shannon this year, a lot of celebrations.
That's correct.
Programs around.
Yes, that's correct. So now let's just look at a very simple network model where there are lots of base stations and lots of these mobile phones connected to these base stations. So what I mean R here is that if suppose this mobile was not there, the rate at which this link would be active, let's say, is R, but because there is one more mobile phone which is connected to this, typically resources are shared equally between the two, and the rate at which this mobile can communicate drops up by half because of the presence of other mobile. This is more or less part of most of the standards, and this is what most operators by default operate at. That if there are n number of mobiles connected to a particular base station, all of them equally get hit of 1 over n. So now here is the definition of the problem. So all these mobiles, let's say, are existing in the network and a new mobile wakes up. Yes.
There, I think your bandwidth or is determining on each factor.
So this is normalized with respect to per hertz. So for 1 hertz of bandwidth, this is what you can.
That is your rate, right? Rather,
yes.
That is also giving you rate.
Yes. This is rate.
Yes. So now there, the age, though there may be many mobiles under the base station.
Right.
There are different age. Okay. Because age is not a constant. Right?
That's correct.
It's a function of distance.
That's correct.
Or position.
Yes.
So.
So there are many ways in which you can do more intelligent scheduling, where if somebody is close by, you can give him more resources than somebody who is farther away, so that the sum rate goes up. But typically, to make sure that everybody is being equally shared, what happens is, irrespective of H, so your point is well taken, that each of these links depend on, so the rate R is not identical across these two. So the small r is not identical for these two mobiles. What I'm telling you is that either in terms of time or in terms of bandwidth, both of them are going to get served equally. So the bandwidth I'm going to give to each of these mobiles is going to be equal. On that bandwidth, you can do what you want to do. So the problem is now that a new mobile wakes up, or he's coming into this particular base station's area of operation, and now the question is, which base station tower should you connect to? And what will happen is, this particular mobile has different rates possible to different base stations depending on the channel as well as its own power coming from these base stations. And what you will decide is which of these base stations one should connect to. What will happen is, once you connect this mobile to any of the base stations, all the existing rates are going to drop. The overall rate will possibly go up, but individually, if you look at each of the mobile's rates, they're going to drop. So for example, if you add this mobile to this base station, rather than getting R by 2, you're going to get R by 3. This mobile will also get a hit on whatever he was getting, divided by 3, and he's also going to get R1 by 3. This is what is going to happen. So the challenge is that you have to decide which base station one has to associate this mobile with, so that the sum rate which is summed across all these mobiles, the rate at which they are able to communicate across the network, is maximized. So that's the problem you want to solve. It's a very simple problem, but has a combinatorial flavor, and that's where the challenge comes in. So this is a legacy problem. It has existed for a while. There are many solutions. Most often what operators decide is, very simple solution, they operate, they connect the mobile to the closest base station, and the story ends there. So the simple solution they operated with is, wherever you find the location of the nearest base station from that particular mobile, and that's what you associate with, and story ends. We look at what performance one gets there. It's actually pretty bad at times, and can one improve upon that is a part of the proposed solution. A more modern problem, which is more interesting, there are many ways in which you can. So these the DBM things are reported back to the base station, and that tells us a rough idea how far you are. And the modern problem is more interesting. It has a little bit of auction flavor also. So let's look at the same kind of network, but now let's suppose that the link between this and this particular link is pretty bad, and in terms of the number of bars, let's say there are no bars available for this particular mobile, and let's assume that these two links are weak for both the mobiles to with respect to this particular base station. So what one can really do is, this is what being proposed now in the part of standards, and definitely will be included whenever the 5G is rolled out, is rather than always looking to directly communicate with the base station, you can actually use other existing mobiles for your communication, either via relaying. That is, in this particular setup, this mobile will actually communicate with some other mobile in his neighborhood who has a reasonable connection with the base station, and this is how communication link is going to get affected. And in this particular case, both these mobiles have weak links. What they can improve upon is by cooperating in some sense, trying to combine signals, what they've got from both the base station, and somehow try to combine them. So just think of an example that I have a mobile phone right now, and so many of you are sitting in the audience, most of the phones are idle. So if I have to download some data, I could rather not directly work with the base station, use all of your mobile's help in some way, and all those mobiles are going to connect to the base station and get lot more data compared to if I were to use my own cell phone. But in the process, I'm going to use your battery. I'm going to use some of your resource. And for that, I will have to compensate you. And that is where the interesting challenge comes in here, that if this mobile is ready to help, he's also going to ask for some credit or some kind of payment to be made so that he can actually help. So this essentially makes it a very interesting market phenomenon here. So each mobile, if he's ready to help somebody else, is going to say, okay, I'm ready to help you as long as you pay me a fixed amount, which is given by B sub I. And this mobile, when he's asking for help, has to give him some payment, which is PI, which is, has to be at least as much as BI, because otherwise he's not going to help you. PI can, so an obvious answer is make PI equal to BI and work with it. It'll turn out that's not sufficient. One has to be slightly more careful because of a potential way in which this mobile can inflate his bid and cheat you and get more payment out compared to what his actual cost is in terms of his own resources being used for your communication. So one has to be slightly more careful, and that is what we will try to do, that a particular rule in which we will decide what payment to make for what particular bid, so that the...
I thought, is it more easier is that the, those are dynamically decided by the service provider, because ultimately I am going to get the service.
Right, so this will also be a centralized solution, which is in some sense decided by... Yes, so decided by the service provider looking at everything in the network.
Yeah.
So it's not local decision, but BI is locally defined, PI is defined globally. So payment PI, which he is going to make, will be defined by the network and asked this person to be given so much credit. So it's not going to be a local decision. So what you want to do is two or three things. One, you want a mechanism design so that there is no incentive for any user to overbid compared to his cost. That's one of the important things. You also want to ensure maximum throughput in terms of who you should connect to, because there are multiple nodes in the network which are possibly bidding for help. They're putting out some bid for which they are ready to help, and you have to select one of them for your communication to happen. And once again, as before, what you want to find is, you want to find an optimal helper rule association so that the network-wide throughput is maximized, subject to the mechanism which is called truthful, essentially to avoid cheating, that nobody has an incentive to over-report than his own cost. So this is what our two problems we are going to look at. Now I'm going to take a slight detour and come back to this problem. So the first part of my title of the talk was graph matching. So I'll essentially move over to that and then come back and see how we can use those results and solve these kind of problems. So here is something more interesting than wireless communication. So think of, I don't know how many of you are dating age here, but if suppose you're still dating and you want to figure out when should you stop dating and commit to the present partner you have, is an interesting question, and I think one should give it a serious thought. So this was an article 2 weeks ago, came out in Times of India, exactly talks about this particular problem, which was lifted, I think they quoted it, either New York Times or Washington Post, that somebody actually, some mathematician wrote about this, the mathematics about perfect match, when do you actually stop dating and try committing. So, because we are in election season in the US and we hear Trump doing crazy things, so I thought, let me just give this same problem in election flavor. So here is the problem. So think about Trump, who is trying to hire a secretary to run his campaign. He is like dumb-witted possibly, but not, so he still understands who will do a good job of his secretary. The interesting thing is, this is going to be an impatient staff hiring. So as soon as you see a staff, either you offer him the position, him or her the position, or you say, okay, I'm not going to hire you. There's no going back saying, wait for a while, I will interview all others and then figure out who is the best candidate among all the people there are. So as soon as the secretary goes in, he's interviewed, a spot decision is made whether to hire him or not. If he's hired, the process stops. If he's not hired, the process continues, and that particular person cannot be hired again. So this is the impatient staff hiring problem. So this is same as if you look at a dating problem where you cannot court two people at the same time. If that was allowed, things would be very different. But at one time, you have to decide whether to keep going on with the relationship or stop the relationship and move on. But things are even more spicy, that if you have an adversary setting who decides the order in which these people go in, things are bad. So one has to be careful. So let's suppose Cruz decides, okay, I don't want Trump to have a great secretary or a great person to run the campaign. What he will do is he will decide the order in which these people go into the interview room, and one can show that if that happens and if there are n secretaries to be interviewed, the probability of choosing the best candidate goes down to 1 over n. This is a slightly complicated argument, so I'm not going to make that. You can do a thought exercise with just two people, that if you are trying to so suppose you are Cruz, what order in which you would try to push these people in? For try to do it for two people, then three people, you'll figure out that you can at least make it to be 1 over n, and if n is large enough, Trump is going to lose all the time. He's not going to hire the best secretary. But if things are not as bad, that there is nobody here, and the arrival is a random order arrival, which is what typically one assumes in most natural phenomena, that the way you don't know ahead of time how good or bad these are, and the order of arrival is random, then one can do something interesting, and the policy is fairly simple. So what you do is you look at half the people and call that the sampling half. So you keep interviewing them but not select anybody. So you're going to just record how good or bad they were and let them go. So you're not going to hire anybody. But record the person who was the best among the first half. And that's your record, that he was the person among the first half who turned out to be the best. But I did not hire any of them. In the second half, this is where I start making decisions. I interview people and stop as soon as I see somebody who is better than the best candidate seen in the first half. So let's suppose the second person in the decision phase turned out to be better than this person. I stop, hire him, and the process stops. And now it's interesting to note that the probability of success now has suddenly, from being 1 over n, has gone to something at least as much as 1 over 4, where the scenario in which you select the best person under this particular strategy is that the second best person arrived somewhere here, and the best person definitely has to arrive because you're selecting him, because the second best person sits somewhere here. So the only person who is better than the second best is the best person. So the second best arrives here, that's it, that's more or less said. And the second best arrives here, the best arrives here, and the probability, because you are coming in random order, the probability that the second best arrives here is 1/2, the best arrives here is another half, and you get at least 1/4. You can do slightly more complicated analysis and show that it is roughly around 38% is what you can get. So the probability of hiring the best secretary can become 38%. So if suppose tomorrow you put out a notice to hire somebody and 10,000 applicants show up, possibly you can use this policy and be successful with 38%.
That assumes that you have in the second half.
Yes.
100% greater or equal to the first.
Right. So that's why I'm counting.
If all the four happens to be in the second half, or what's that
No, what
the
first
half is the first half.
There are many more cases. So I'm just giving you one simple event in which you select the best person. There are many more events that you can select best person. So what I've told you is 1/4 is at least you win by 1/4. You can actually do better and get to 38%, and that's pretty much the maximum you can do.
Yes. The thing is, you know how many people are coming to.
Yes, I know, but even that can be handled. Even if I don't know, you can use something like a doubling trick and get. Yes.
The first question was that if there is unlimited resource, then
The algorithm becomes slightly more complicated. That's
you. What is the guarantee?
Guarantee is close to. It's not 38% now. Guarantee is slightly less. No, you have to randomize the order. If you put a deterministic order, then I can always beat you. Okay. I don't know why this has happened thrice now. No, it's got it. All right, so let me get ahead. So success probability is at least 1/4, and you can do slightly better, but not too much better. So now let me come to the graph. Like, we're not talked about graph anymore. So let's just say that Trump wanted to hire as a blue. Okay, this is a sacrilegious, I think, calling him blue node, but let's just do that. What is really going on is, in terms of a graph, is at each time a red node arrives here, reveals the rank in some sense, that what value this particular secretary has it for the person who is hiring, and you have to decide whether to stop the process, select him and stop. So in this process, if the weights were this, you would have identically ideally waited for 20, but because of the algorithm which you are following, possibly you would have stopped somewhere before and not got 20. Because this is an online problem, you got to decide as soon as you see what is going on. You don't get the benefit of hindsight. You cannot interview everybody and then decide. So if you could see everybody, it's really easy to pick up an edge with 20 if you wanted to maximize the rank. So 20, so typically ranks are ordered 1 to n. I'm here just doing the opposite. 20 is better than 2. So you still want to accept the edge with the largest weight instantaneously. A natural generalization of this problem is that there is not just one particular person hiring, but there are more people hiring and there are a lot of students. Let's say this example, where lots of faculty advisors want to select students, and as soon as a student arrives to the interview, you interview him and you have certain marks to him. You associate, okay, I well give him 65, 70, 75, and you can put these numbers down. Again, the process is still impatient, that as soon as this person arrives, you got to select him or not to select him. And if you select him, you also decide who is going to work with. So there are two things to be found out. One, whether to select this particular red node, and if yes, who should he be connected to? And you keep going on. So this also is the same impatient hiring problem, where when the second node arrives, he knows what has happened before. Like this side of the problem knows who arrived before, but doesn't know what's going to happen in future, and these instantaneous decisions are made one after another. And this is what the hiring process is going to be. And what you want to find out is, under this constraint that each advisor gets at most one student, this is essentially a matching problem, and the allocation is not made strategically by people on the right side, but somebody, for in this example, Paritosh, who is going to make this decision in the with an objective that the sum of the edges being accepted has to be the largest. So in this particular example, let's suppose these are the weights to the blue nodes and the red nodes. What you want to do is, you want to find the matching, in this particular case, the solid red lines, such that the max across the matching is sum of the weights on these accepted edges is maximized. So in this case, the first node is attached to the first blue node, the second one goes to the third, and the last one goes to the blue node, and that's where the process stops. So it's note that it's not a greedy process. Even though the red node has the highest weight to this blue node, which was 10, this was not actually selected, because what you wanted was to maximize the sum and not maximize each of the individual maxima. So if they are working strategically, possibly this node would have been selected at time 1, and then it could have stopped some other edges to be selected. So the objective is to maximize the sum of the accepted nodes, subject to the condition that one red node can be paired to at most one blue node, and one blue node can be at most paired to one red node. This is called, as in the CS literature, as a matching. So again, the problem is that you want to solve this in online fashion. If suppose the graph was revealed to you completely, so now we'll talk only in terms of graphs, that this is the graph which tells you weights between all the blue and the red nodes, and if suppose all of this graph was available to you, what it tells you is that you can interview everybody and decide at the end. That is what the setting we are in. Then you can solve this easily. It's a polynomial time algorithm to solve this. But our interest is in solving this in an online fashion, that once a red node arrives, tell him right away if he's going to be accepted, if he's accepted, to which blue node he's going to be associated with. So we are going to use the same idea as we did for a single blue node, where we were deciding for some sampling time and then decision time. So what we will do is, again, partition the set of red nodes into two halves. The first half we will call the sampling phase, and the second half we will call the decision phase. In the first half, what we will do is, we will not select anybody, and we will try to generate a good threshold for matching with respect to just these first half of the nodes. So think about, I'm not going to select any one of them here. I'm just going to use them as a dummy for my decision phase, which is going to happen later. And in this dummy, I will find out what is the best matching possible without having actually to match anybody here. So these two nodes, even though they are matched to this blue node and this blue node, they're not actually going to be match, there's just a virtual matching going on. And what happened was, if this is the best matching, what I will decide is that the blue node, the value I can generate from this particular blue node is exactly equal to the weight if I had matched this blue node to this red node. And in this particular case, you can define this as to be the threshold, that how good or what's the value of this blue node in terms of the matching, that how much can I extract. Think about going to a market and discovering a good price for a product which you don't know. So you keep looking for, let's say, 10 shops. You look at the shop which has the least price among the first 10 shops, and thereafter, whichever shop quotes a price which is lower than the first 10 shops, you go ahead and buy. So you, in some sense, you're discovering some kind of a threshold for the price you're going to pay for the product. In this particular case, you're discovering a price for this blue node. If I associate with any node, if this node was available, I will at least get 9 from it. This is what I'm trying to extract from this particular case. For this particular node, it's at least going to be 6. And this threshold is what I'm going to use when I actually start making decisions.
You say I, you're talking the individual advisors are making this decision or Paritosh is making this?
Paritosh is making. So, the find the best matching is with respect to the whole graph, because this whole graph is revealed to you. It's only the second half which is not revealed to you. So, looking at the full graph, you're just making the best matching decision possible.
Different from the shop,
point
the shop
and
doing, because there it's all the individual people who are
right. So this is for one particular person. So I'm just giving, that's correct. So now in this decision phase, what I do is I look at any of the red vertex which has arrived, look at all the edge weights and consider only those edges which have their weights larger than the price I've set for the blue nodes. So in this case, the weight on the first blue node is 10, which is larger than 9, so I'm going to consider this edge. While assume that P2 is larger than 1, I'm going to delete that, as well as this 5 is clearly less than 6. So both these nodes are not worthy of selecting in some sense, because the thresholds I have put it for myself are 9 and 6. So what I do is I actually only look at that node and pair it with this particular blue node. So the algorithm wise, what you're doing is you're matching the largest weight subject to the price, the weight on this edge to be larger than the price set in the earlier threshold from the sampling phase. This is precisely what was going on when there was only one blue node. When we looked at the first half, we selected the person which has the largest in terms of the rank. This is precisely what is largest in terms of the ranks for the first half. And in the second half, you're looking at somebody who can beat this and get selected. So if you reduce this to just one particular blue node, this is precisely what was going on in the secretary problem. This is a simple generalization of that. So if you do this, what has been shown around 8 years ago is that this algorithm is, so the probability of winning in our earlier case was somewhere around 1/4. Here, because you're looking at maximizing the weight of accepted edges, what they were able to show is that this algorithm will at least get you 1/8 of the optimal algorithm, where you don't even know what the optimal algorithm is possibly. So the guarantee is pretty strong and does not depend on how these weights are or what these weights are. As long as the arrival order is uniformly random, this guarantee holds. So follow this algorithm and you can get a guaranteed return of 1/8 from the optimal. So now back to our legacy problem, that how are you going to solve this problem where a new mobile wakes up and you're going to associate this mobile to one of the base stations. You can think of now with the earlier example in mind that this is again a matching problem where the mobiles now are on the left side, where mobiles are arriving one after another while base stations are all there. As soon as the mobile arrives, it reveals all the rates it can operate at from different base stations, and the job is to associate one mobile to one of the base stations. The point to note is that we don't any longer need a matching, that one base station can actually accept more than one mobile. And that is what is going on. So this is not any more a matching problem. So if suppose you match the first mobile to the first base station and you get a rate R1, and you're going to get rate R4 from the last mobile to the first base station, the overall rate is going to be R1 by 2 plus R4 by 2. That is what the total rate you're going to get. And this is a valid scenario because we don't really need a matching. One base station can actually handle more than one mobile phone. But what the question to note is that if suppose I could drop one of them, so I'm required to attach both of them to the base station and I get rate which is R1 plus R4 by 2, but But if suppose R1 is larger than R4, it's better if I actually drop this connection, somehow deny that connection, which I can't do in practice. But if suppose I could just deny the connection to the last mobile, I would get more rate, because now the rate will go up to R1 itself, and that is definitely larger than R1 plus R4 by 2. But this is not allowed. You have to associate, because that's the contract you entered when you're giving out a SIM card, that whenever you turn on your phone, I will give you some service. So this is not allowed, but if it was allowed, then I would get larger rate. So this is a motivation from which we'll use the earlier results on matching, which required one base station getting only one mobile phone. So what we're going to do is the following. So the max weight with matching is still an upper bound on what I can do when I don't have to follow the matching condition. This is the point I'm trying to make, that if you could attach only one mobile to each base station, you can actually get more rate compared to having to require to connect every single mobile. So what are we going to do is, the idea is going to be follows. So earlier model, the result we saw was 1/8 when each base station can handle at most one mobile. So what we're going to do is uniformly randomly pick one base station and call it in some sense a junk base station. So this is the base station which is going to cater to all mobiles which are not being selected by every other mobile. So let me specify what I mean is, so just randomly select one of the base stations and keep it aside, don't do anything with it. Solve the matching problem which we did before with m. So let's say the total number of base stations is m. Solve a matching problem with m minus 1 base stations with respect to all these red nodes. So just remove this from the problem and solve exactly the earlier problem where we were selecting students and we were matching students with advisors. Think about removing one advisor and solving the same problem. So whoever does not get matched to any of these m minus 1 advisors is going to be matched to that one advisor who is going to be deleted from this. So this is going to be extremely crowded field in terms of that one particular advisor who happens to be selected in this particular scenario. So you're picking one advisor out of the possible advisors, keeping them out of the system, assigning all these students to one student to one advisor among the m minus 1, and all the students who are being rejected by these m minus 1 advisors are going to be connected to this one particular advisor. Yes. So what we have done is we have randomly selected one and not bothered it about completely. And if any user is not selected in this algorithm which we are going to follow, he is going to be connected to that particular base station. Yes.
So the first half of the students, all of them will get matched.
Absolutely. And even in the second half, who is not going to be matched? Because there will be cases in which even in second half, you are not sufficiently high enough in terms of the threshold set, you are going to get associated. This is irritating now. Okay, it's back. Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah, that was mine. But it.
No, it's something like it goes to sleep for some.
Can you not disable the sleep?
I don't know. This phone is. This laptop is not on sleep because of the connection. It's going to sleep. Yeah, it should be back. Yeah, so suddenly that's correct, that all red users who are going to fall in the sampling phase are going to get associated with this particular base station, as well as anybody who is rejected even in the second phase and not connected to these base stations. So let's just do an example here, that in the sampling phase, this particular user is connected here, this particular user is connected here. Again, as before, we're going to set the same price, and when the decision phase arrives, so let's look at if these two are the edges where you can get it. What is going to happen is, because the weights are not sufficiently high enough, 5 and 2 do not trump 9 and 6, this user is not going to be connected to any of the m-1 base stations, and he is going to get paired to this randomly selected base station.
So it's a possibility that all of the red pairs are going.
But that's going to be very unlikely, because you are looking at uniformly random input arrivals, and that's not going to happen very often. So what you can, yeah, so and the next time when a new node arrives, if suppose it is larger than 9, which is here in this example 10, is going to get associated with this base station, and the process continues. So what you can say is that it's a very simple fit from the early algorithm, that 8 anyway we got from the early algorithm. What you can, in additional hit of m over m minus 1, where m is the number of base stations, you can show that this algorithm also is this competitive for this particular mobile allocation problem. So there are certain implications. One, as we already discussed, that what can happen is lot of users get associated to just one base station, which can overload a particular base station. There are hacks to it where you can take away a small amount of penalty and lower. So rather than selecting one base station uniformly randomly and loading with all the rejected users, you can pick two or three at a time and then do this, and you can reduce the load on the bad base stations. But then automatically you also step back from the guarantee you're getting. So rather than m over m minus 1, you start getting m over m minus 2, m minus 3, and so on. So the penalty will increase, but at the cost of reducing the load on each individual base station. But it's still better than the natural algorithm, which is actually being used in practice, where most often you only connect to the nearest base station, and the performance can be very different. So this graph, what is telling you is, this is a function of number of users on the x-axis, and the competitive ratio, essentially, don't worry about that. That if it's larger, it means that you are farther and farther away from the optimal. So the blue line here is for associating the mobile to the strongest base station, which also happens to be the closest, while the algorithm which I suggested can actually be much better than doing the strongest base station allocation. So there is significant improvement one can do by not following the algorithm which is part of the legacy systems. Alright, so with that we will move over to the more interesting problem, which is also a more modern problem. So the earlier problem is kind of a legacy, it's not very interesting. Pushing people to change their association rules are going to be much harder. So we haven't had, even though we have talked to certain people, but it's going to be very unlikely that things are actually going to change in the standard where people are going to follow this particular kind of algorithm. But in 5G, at least we can hope to do something. And here is something interesting which we can think about. So just to revise, each of these mobiles, whenever they're idle, they actually put out a bid saying, I can help you if you want me, but you have to pay a certain price, BI. And the decision to make is the three constraints. You want to make sure that these bits BI being made out are not cheating you in some sense. You also want to maximize the throughput, where the decision variable is who you should connect to, because this user could possibly connect to here or somewhere else. You also have a payment budget, that you don't have infinite amount of money to pay to these people. So you have a certain budget under which you are working. And also what you don't know is when somebody is going to get idle and when he is going to put out a bid. And in this way, this problem is again our original motivation from the original problem, where when a secretary arrives, you don't know who is going to arrive after him. Similarly, when a bid for a help is available, you don't know, should you accept this bid or should you wait for some better bids to come later. So it has interesting facets. It has a market equilibrium kind of scenario. It is online. And what you want to do is, as before, an optimal association rule with respect to these helpers, so that the incentive rule, which is in the auction community, is called truthful. And I will give you an example that why truthful auctions. This is some kind of an auction going on, that a bid is put out that I can help you. Now it's a reverse auction. If you look at our normal auctions, we are putting out, this is what work I want to get done. Somebody else puts out a bid saying, okay, I can do this work for so much money. You pick the bid which is the least among the lot, and the auction ends. Here it's exactly the opposite. A bid is being put out first, then you are accepting him and paying certain payment. So it's a reverse auction in that way. So why care about truthfulness? Is it like not guaranteed by the mechanism itself? And here is a simple example. If you follow cricket and IPL and Yuvraj Singh, so this is like the great example one can give, that his true worth nobody is able to discover, but they just fear that if he goes away, he is going to ruin ourselves. So if he plays for the opposite team, we are going to get hit by a lot many more runs. So the first time he went for auctions, this was the price Pune paid to get him. Second time it went to crazy amounts as 14 crores. Third time it was even worse. And fourth time, which happened just few months ago, it has come down, but it's still way more than any of his peers in terms of the performance in 8 seasons of IPL. So this is the great example of that if you follow auctions and you don't ensure things are done in the right way, the true value can never be paid, and this kind of auctions will not be truthful. So let me be vague here, I'm not making it precise what truthfulness is, but what I essentially want to say is people like Yuvraj Singh who have done similar performance in IPLA, they're not even getting 1/10 of this kind of money. So what special attribute he has, nobody really knows, but it's just the fear of him playing against you that is what keeping people away and paying him such crazy amounts. So one great, like a very simple fix to all these kind of problems was proposed by, so these people did many more interesting works. I'm going to very the smallest and the simplest things they did is to make sure that an auction, a simple auction, can be made truthful. So think about, you're auctioning out a painting and lots of people are bidding crazily in the audience, and unless things are well defined or well designed, again truthfulness is very difficult to guarantee. So what they did was to come up with a very simple idea that each person whoever wants to bid for this will give his bid in a closed envelope. He will not shout out that this is my bid. The winner will still be the person who pays the largest or is willing to pay the largest amount among all of them, but the price he is going to pay is not going to be what he quoted, but the person right after him. So everybody is quoting a price. You give the object to the person who quotes the largest quote, that I am willing to put out so many rupees for this, but the actual price he pays for getting that object is not his price, but the price which was quoted just below him by somebody else. So this is called as a second price auction, and again I am not going to prove that this is truthful. You can do it as a nighttime interesting exercise, that again take just two players or three players, that there is no incentive for you to over report your bid when you are actually bidding than the true value you associate with getting that object. So again, this should again be, I think, implemented while we are auctioning out things here. You can flip this. So you want a task to be done, you get the bids, and you always choose the L1 bid as the one who wins. So rather than paying him also the L1 price, you should actually pay the L2 price. Select the L1 person, but pay the L2 price. As long as they don't collude while bidding, this will make sure that things are truthful. So they will not, there will be no incentive for them to underreport the cost they are actually bidding for. But it's a very important assumption that they are not colluding before bidding process goes on. So the problem, the 5G problem I described, is actually equivalent to a crowdsourcing problem. So again, taking an example of election season. So think about, election requires lots of different jobs to be handled these days. So canvassing is one of them, managing the social media is another, event management, making speeches, so many other jobs, and there are lots of people who would possibly bid for these kind of jobs, and you also have a total budget that how much money you actually can spend on all these jobs. So once a person puts out a bid saying I can do this job, you have to decide for its payment subject to the total budget being satisfied. So this is exactly the 5G problem I want to solve, but again in an online fashion where whenever each person bids, I don't know who is coming next, he is going to bid more than this, what kind of task he can do, I have no clue, and I'm still going to design an algorithm which has some guarantee with respect to the optimal algorithm. So here is an example of the problem we want to solve. So let's assume the red nodes are helpers and blue nodes are the tasks. So in the election thing is pretty clear, in the mobile setting these are the people who are seeking help and these are people who are willing to give up help. Each of them, as soon as they arrive, they also give you a bid at which they are ready to do the job, and this is the value associate of their help. So task 1, if he gets help by this person, he gets the value 9, and so on and so forth. Again, just to keep things simple, both left and right can get associated to at most one red or blue node. Here you don't really have to make sure that, because even in a mobile scenario you can actually get help from multiple mobiles. But let's just for simplicity assume that you're going to always seek help from just one extra mobile and no more. So what you want to do is to find a truthful matching such that the weight on the accepted edges is maximized, but at the same time you also have to make payments. So let's suppose that this was what you accepted, these particular places, you also have to make payments in the reverse direction, where P1 has to be greater than B1, P2 has to be greater than Bn, and PM has to be greater than or equal to B2, because that's the constraint we have set up for the problem that if I am asking for a bid B1, you have to pay me that much, otherwise I am not going to help you. But also I have a total budget constraint which is given by capital B, and all these payments have to satisfy this particular constraint. So we are still looking for maximizing the sum weight on these edges, but now there are additional constraints that payment have to be made, they have to be larger than individual bids, and they also have to be less than, the total has to be less than the total constraint on the budget. So in the most non-technical way, I can state this, that for such an auction to be made truthful, so the Vickrey, Crash and Gross does not work directly here. So what you need is something more technical, but let me just say it in English as far as I can do. So you can ensure that such an auction is truthful as long as you can ensure two properties. And two properties are fairly simple. That let's suppose in a certain scenario, you're accepting a particular agent to do a certain job. If he bids a certain value, let's say he asking for 10 rupees and you accepted him. If tomorrow he's going to ask for 9 rupees, if your algorithm ensures that you always select him, that's the first condition. That if you're selecting somebody at a price, and tomorrow if he quotes a certain price which is below that price, you're always going to select him. Which seems natural, that today is like assuming nothing has changed over 2 days. And second, there is a critical price that there exists some threshold such that if the agent bids above it, irrespective of what is going on in the system, he is never selected. So if you can ensure these two conditions, then automatically meta theorem by Meyerson long ago proves that that kind of algorithm is truthful. So you just have to ensure these two conditions and things are okay. So the second condition is more technical, that you have to show that there is a threshold price for each of the agents such that if they report the bid, so they may or may not know that critical price. But if suppose they quote something above, they are never going to get selected. So the algorithm again is inspired by our earlier algorithm, which was sample and then decide. Here the sample and decide is going to not only depend on, so we decided some thresholds for these blue nodes through the sampling phase, and then whoever came in the decision phase which was larger than the threshold, we selected him. Now because there is a bid, we have to worry about something which we will define as the bid to benefit ratio. So think about bid as value as this, and benefit is how much benefit you derive by selecting this particular person, and that bid depends on the edge. So for each edge, define a ratio which is called the bid to benefit ratio, and over this ratio we will work on this algorithm. So there are two things. One is the value you generate by accepting a particular node, and second, because you have to make a payment, there is also this cost to benefit ratio. So earlier we just looked at a threshold for when you are running this sampling algorithm, that if I am selecting this particular person, the next time I am going to select this person, the bid the value has to be at least as much as 100, and otherwise I am not going to select. Here I will have to come up with two thresholds. One threshold will be how much value I could generate in the sampling phase, and what is the bid, critical bid to benefit ratio I should worry about. That if somebody is giving me benefit which is 10 times larger than the earlier benefit, but is also quoting 10 times larger bid, it's kind of meaningless to me because I also have to make a payment which is 10 times larger. So that's why this quantity very critically enters the picture. So we'll generate two thresholds which we'll use in the decision phase. One threshold is for what is the value of this particular blue edge and what is the critical value on the edge itself. So one for the right vertex and one for the edge, and that will be called the gamma. Let me define. So this is my second equation. I have left one more equation. So what I'm going to call a good graph is the graph, so remove all the edges which have bid to benefit ratio greater than some threshold gamma. So because bid is the cost I'm going to pay, so lesser the bid to benefit ratio, better I am. So I've defined, not, I could have defined other way, that utility divided by the bid, but I'm here defining as bid divided by the benefit. So smaller the bid to benefit ratio, better is an edge. So I'm going to keep all the edges in this graph which have bid to benefit ratio less than gamma, throw away everybody else. So let's just take an example. Let's say gamma is 0.1, and given these values, these edges are going to go up because their bid to benefit ratio is greater than 0.1. And among this, I'm going to look at a greedy algorithm, which is a matching algorithm again. So what it's going to do is it looks at the largest weight edge, looks at 100 first, selects it. Because of 100 being selected, 50 goes out because two edges cannot go into one blue node. So 120 are the selected edges on the sampling phase for this particular value of gamma. I do this for every single gamma possible. So just look at a continuous optimization and find the largest gamma. So this is my third equation, and that's it. Such that gamma times the value associated on the matching is less than my budget B. So this is my algorithm for the sampling part. So what I've done is I've looked at fixed a threshold, looked at a graph which had bid to benefit ratio at most gamma, found a greedy matching, and figured out among all gammas possible which gamma satisfies this, which is the largest among them. So this gamma is going to be my threshold for selecting edges in the decision phase. So if any edge has bid to benefit ratio greater than gamma, I'm not going to select it, because to me in the sampling phase the thresholds I've derived are, in some sense, this is the value I should look for. It's just that I have to make this decision online, I could not go back, so I'm going to use this as a proxy to actually start making decisions. So what we do is at the end of the sampling phase we find two things. One, the threshold utility, that is, unless some edge has a weight larger than 100, I'm not going to give away my blue node in this. Similarly in here 20, and at the same time I will also generate the same gamma and look at any edge which has bit to utility ratio greater than gamma, not selected. So now comes the decision phase, in which what have we got? We have got gamma and the threshold utility. So let's say the optimal gamma also turned out to be 0.1. This is an example, and the utility thresholds are 100. A new red node arrives in the decision phase. These are the values associated. So this is the only edge which is valid, is 25, as well as the bit to benefit ratio on this is also less than gamma. So both these conditions are satisfied, and I end up selecting this particular edge and I go on. The payment, which is the most critical aspect of all this, so until now I have not defined you what payment I am going to make to each of these nodes. I have only defined you which nodes I am going to select. I have selected according to two rules. One was on the how much utility I am going to derive, as well as how much bit to benefit ratio is the least I am expecting. The third final thing is that the payment I am going to make is going to be the same gamma which I got from the decision phase, from the earlier phase. So that's in some sense the critical value I should pay, times the value you are generating. So in this particular example, the payment made to this guy will be 25 times 0.1. That's the payment is going to be made to this person, and he is selected. It's automatically greater than his bid by definition, because he is less than gamma, so that happens automatically. So those conditions are satisfied, and this is the payment you make. What you can show is that not only that this is whole algorithm is truthful, which satisfies the Meyerson's conditions, one can show it's 144 times the optimal. This is guarantee could be very bad for most of you, but this is a theoretical answer I can give you, that if you are running an optimal algorithm, which you don't know what it is, this algorithm is at least 1 over 144 of that optimal algorithm. It might be slightly far away, but at least it gives you a theoretical guarantee.
But does it guarantee that you will always get at least one node on this connection?
So this is all on average. So the average utility you will get is 1 over 144 times of the optimal utility you will get otherwise. If you simulate, things will be much nicer. This is the worst case guarantee. So here are some of the collaborators to this work. So Andrew is at IIT Madras, Marceau is at Telecom Paris Tech, who I visited last summer, and these are my funding agencies, National Science Academy and Indo-French Grant. And let me stop with this cartoon and take questions. So in the mobile problem, that's exactly the rate you get.
So the objective is to maximize the total base stations.
No. So the second problem, there are no base stations. What we are trying to figure out is each user is trying to figure out some other user who can help him.
Sorry, I mean the first
problem. Yeah, first problem is the base station. That's good.
Yeah. So the first step we are using as a proxy.
Mm-hmm. So in the second part, no, second part they are not connected at all, they are left as it is.
Yeah,
so second problem, we had the only two sets of mobiles, there is no base station as such really you can think of. There are some of them are idle, some of them are active. Active people are seeking help from idle mobiles. So they put out a bid, it's in their interest to actually get selected because then only they can make some money. But if the bids are too high, I'm not going to select them.
And this ordering is ordering on the left side.
So left side is idle users.
Yeah, so but how will you order them?
There's no ordering. It's just, so let's say you're active until certain time, you become idle at that particular time. So as soon as you become idle, you come into that set. So now you can help somebody when you become idle.
This is not 5G but 2G, 3G. You see that the base station at the nearest distance you get connected to your mobile.
Right.
So you all move and then you change your location and the next tower comes
in. Right. So it automatically goes to the next nearest. So when you are on the cell boundary is like you are almost equidistant from two base stations. That's where the problem cases are. But as soon as you move into the cell boundary of the nearing base station, you automatically get connected. It's called. Sorry, I couldn't get the question.
Cell phones are connected to that particular tower.
Yes. Right. So that. Right. So that's not part of the problem. It's automatically hardwired to going over to that particular base station. Because most base stations or these things are designed for voice communication and there the rates are not very important. As soon as you get 64 kbps, more of things are okay. It's always only the problem with the data transfer, which is what we are going for, and they're not designed for that. That is where all the big problems are. See? Allah kind of thing.
So in the last example, there were only one mobile which was selected. And that turned out to be the most valuable. I mean, that is the optimal one.
May not be optimal one. Our algorithm is selecting him. That may or may not be optimal.
But suppose, you know, the blues represent all the tasks in an election.
Right.
You have to fill all the tasks.
So that's a very complex, because what there goes on is, then you can start becoming monopolistic in some sense. If every task has to be covered, then things like the algorithm presented does not work. And it's inherently a hard problem. Because think of it that in terms of a particular user, if he is that you have to cover one particular user and he is just sitting in a basement, possibly you'll have to pay much more larger amount of money to get him some help rather than not giving him any help at all. So that's the problem. If you have to cover every single person, then the budget constraint as well as the truthfulness can actually be complicated.
And suppose I have 294 seats in the assembly.
Right.
And I have to have half of them elected.
Yes.
And I want to have some particular leader also elected. That's the most important
right.
leader. So can this problem be applied to the similar kind of thing?
See, if you insist on one particular person, even here, the same problem will again arise. The truthfulness will be complicated to ensure. Because here you are treating everybody in some sense equal. So there is no special node here. If there is a special node which I had to give help or take help from, he could not give me a good bargain. That's the point.
Okay.
So that's allowed in here. So this blue to red node is, I'm not say this, but blue can become red and red can become blue.
So once you blue becomes red, you have to compute the whole thing?
No, but you're anyway doing online. So you already, so it's like a lookup table thereafter. So once you've gone over your observation phase, it's a lookup table.
Yeah, but once a blue node goes to a red node.
So he becomes part of the red thereafter.
Yeah, but the blue table remains.
Yeah. I have just one number to hold to me.
Yeah, okay. No more questions. So this is the practice of asset. Like Robin to take this question.